Good afternoon, everyone. Allison Skaberg here with Consolidated Planning Group. We are happy to be back with you today if you're joining us and you've joined us in the past for our educational webinars. If you are joining us the first time, welcome. We are glad you are here. We put out a lot of educational webinars in planning when it comes to planning for a loved one with a disability. I myself am a parent to two and a half with disabilities. You know, we have one that maybe is not clearly identified as that, but anyway, I eat, sleep, and breathe this both personally and professionally. I am the owner of Consolidated Planning Group. We are a holistic special needs financial planning firm, and we help families just like yours plan for the future of their loved one with a disability. We're nationally certified as Social Security advisors, and we help people have money in the right buckets to preserve eligibility for state and federally funded programs, and come up with, like, how much money are we going to need to fund a special needs trust in the future when we're gone. We do a lot of advocacy. We help people set up ABLE accounts and, you know, protection plans to make sure that when we're no longer here as a parent or a caregiver, or no longer have the capacity to provide the caregiving services that we once did, that there is a plan in place for our loved ones. So today, from a housekeeping perspective, if you're joining us again, I wanna change it up a little bit today. Usually we invite you to put your questions in the chat box and we take the questions throughout the presentation. Today, we invite you to put your questions in the chat box and we are gonna address the questions at the end today, because most of the slides are going to address a lot of the questions today. That doesn't mean we don't want you to ask them. We absolutely do. And most of the time, if somebody has a question, somebody else has that same question. So those are really good. And that's how we learn and grow. So today, from a housekeeping perspective, we are in webinar mode, which means that we can't see you or hear you, but we do know you're there and we're glad you're here. So having said that, we are happy and excited to be back with our friend Tressie Weeks with the Weeks Law Firm, and she is going to take a deep dive into special needs planning. She is an attorney herself, as and also a parent of a child with special needs. There's lots of decisions that need to be made. She's going to kind of take a deep dive into some of these things and when it comes to planning for your loved one with a disability. So thanks so much for being here, Tressie. I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you, Allison, and welcome everyone. And Allison, you can go to the next slide. We're going to talk about the top 10 questions we get about special needs trusts. So let's do this by some case studies. We find that illustrating it works. These are not real clients because of attorney-client privilege. I'm not telling you about my clients. If you're my client, then I'm not telling anyone about you. But these are based on real situations. So let's imagine Izzy. So Izzy is a young adult. She is living at home, and she is having a great life. She has an online business. She has a lot of friends that visit her from the neighborhood. She's receiving SSI and she's receiving Medicaid and Medicaid waiver programs. Those programs are paying her mother to care for her. They are paying for diaper supplies, a lot of those things. And because of that, her parents are able to keep her at home. But unfortunately, her parents passed away without doing any proper planning. So what happens to Izzy when they pass away? Well, their estate goes to her outright and there's no attorney involved in any of this. And because it goes to her outright, she loses her SSI and Medicaid. So as you can imagine, what's left to her has to pay for everything that her parents did for free, plus pay for everything that SSI and Medicaid had paid for. So at some point, the parents' money runs out. So what happens when that money runs out? Well, she'll get SSI and Medicaid again, but that only gives her $914 a month for shelter. And then she's only got Medicaid. She had been under her father's health insurance plan that covered more, but that's now gone. So unfortunately for Izzy, she ended up in an institution and lived her life very dismally. The second case study is Andrew. So let's imagine Andrew is a young adult living in a group home. Now, the group home that he lives in costs more than what his SSI check is, but his parents pay that because it's in the neighborhood he grew up in. He likes the guys that he lives with. His parents knew not to leave money outright to him. They didn't want him to lose his government benefits. So they decided they would leave it to their daughter, Susan, because Susan loves Andrew and they know that she would use that money for his care. So the parents pass away. They had saved all their life to provide for Andrew, and all of that went to Susan. But then, and sure enough, Susan loved Andrew. She used it for his care. But then Susan died, and everything that she had went to her husband because that was what was in her will. So all the parents' money ended up with Susan's husband. They lived in another state. He remarried and he kept all the money. So now Andrew has no money and all he's left with is SSI and Medicaid. And because his group home was more expensive, he couldn't live in that group home. So he had to live in a group home that was completely paid for by the government benefits. And there weren't any in the neighborhood he lives in. So he had to go live in a different part of town. And he was had to live with some guys that weren't very nice to him. So his parents' wishes were not carried out in this situation. All right, our next case study, we can go to the next slide, is Kyle. Kyle also lives in a group home and he has a job that he loves. He works at Kroger bagging groceries. And all the people that he grew up with, everyone loves Kyle. So they'll go to his Kroger just to chat with Kyle. Now, his dad did create a special needs trust so that when he passed away, that money went into the trust. But the dad named his brother, we'll call him Uncle Bob, he named Uncle Bob as the trustee. Uncle Bob lived in another state and didn't really know Kyle. So, what ended up happening is Kyle had to move to the state where Uncle Bob lived. So he didn't have friends there. He didn't know anyone there. He didn't like the climate there. He was very unhappy. But that's because he didn't have a support team here. If he'd had a group of people here advocating and talking with Uncle Bob and saying, you know, we can help take care of him here, that would have worked. But unfortunately, in the situation, even though he was financially provided for, he lost his friends, his familiar sound surroundings, his job. All went away. Now, in all of these scenarios, we could avoid these negative outcomes if the parents had planned properly. So let's talk about how to do that. First, what government benefits are available? So in this presentation, we're talking about mostly SSI and Medicaid. SSI is Supplemental Security Income. This year, is it 943 or 941? I'm not sure. 940 something per month.
943.
Okay. It's 943 a month that is meant for shelter. Actually, there's a new rule that, well, that's a different thing we'll talk about. But that's supposed to be for food and shelter. And then Medicaid is basic medical care. And there are the Medicaid waiver programs that might provide attendant care, respite, therapy, residential, and supplies. So let's talk about the eligibility requirements. In order to get these, the individual must be sufficiently disabled and have low income and limited resources. Now, the Medicaid waiver programs all have different eligibility requirements, so we're going to focus on the basic SSI and Medicaid. To be financially eligible, the individual must have less than $2,000 in resources and have less than $2,000 in monthly income. And I want to just caution you here. I'm talking in very general terms. It's actually more complicated than this, but I just want to use this to illustrate how we're going to do the planning. Okay. So monthly income, and this number has changed. If your child's just receiving Medicaid, they have to have monthly income of less than $2,000. If they're on SSI, it actually has to be less. Now, we know that if your child is working, that's considered income. But there are other things that Social Security considers income that you and I wouldn't consider income. Because SSI is for food and shelter, if somebody uses or provides shelter, there's a new rule that takes out the food, but if somebody else provides shelter, or if somebody gives your child cash or any asset that could be converted to food and shelter, that is considered income to your child. Under the deeming principle, when the child is under 18, the income and resources of the parents is considered to be that of the child. But the second the child turns 18, the parents' income and resources are no longer considered. Now, if your child's SSI is reduced, as long as your child is getting at least $1 of SSI, they will automatically be eligible for Medicaid.
Trustee, I just want to indicate here, because you said something that's really important, that prior to a child turning age 18, it's based off of the parents' income and assets, not the child's. And then when the child turns 18, it's based off of the child's income and assets. And that doesn't even matter if they're under guardianship or if they live in your house. And I just want to hone in on that because a lot of times people have applied for SSI before and got denied. And they didn't know that they should go back to the well once the child turns 18. So I just wanted to reiterate the importance of that. And I know you're going to kind of take that a little bit deeper.
Yes, thank you, Allison. And also keep in mind the Medicaid waiver programs. Some of those programs do not consider assets of parents below the age of 18. Every one of those programs have different requirements. So, SSI has a rule that in-kind support and maintenance, what is considered income. So if your child is living with you, you're providing their shelter, then that's considered income to your child. But they have a certain rule that you can use that will reduce the SSI check by one third of the maximum amount. So it's not, you don't have to do the percentage of your child's share. Typically, you just take the one third reduction. Now, there are ways to avoid the one-third reduction, and one of them is that your child will pay rent. So for a lot of our clients, when the child turns 18, we will enter into a rental agreement where your child pays $500 or $600 to you. And as long as they're doing that, they do not receive that one-third reduction. We'll talk about, you might be able to run it through an ABLE account. That is a different conversation, okay? Now let's talk about assets. They SSA calls it resources. They have to have less than 2,000. There are some things your child can own that are not counted against them. If they own a home, a car, a personal item, or a 529 education account. Of course, ABLE accounts do not count either. Now, what does count is if there are bank accounts or investment accounts in your child's name. If you have a uniform transfer to minor account, these are minor savings accounts. When your child turns 21, they have a right to those assets and it will count against them as an asset. And of course, investments in real estate. Now, I do want to tell you, this is so important, is that your child's benefits will change. So if you or your spouse are contributing to the Social Security system, when you take Social Security retirement, your child's benefits will change. If your child was disabled prior to the age of 22, then they're eligible for the Disabled Adult Child Benefit. And they will get up to half of the parent's Social Security check. So that could be more than the SSI. But the great thing about this is once your child has been getting Disabled Adult Child Benefits for 2 years, then they get Medicare. And they can be eligible for Medicaid and Medicare. For a lot of families, that Medicare is the golden ticket because a lot of doctors take Medicare that don't take Medicaid. Okay. Next slide. Now, there are over 40 different Medicaid programs in Texas with different eligibility requirements, and they provide different services. So, if you do not have your child on those wait lists, you might want to call Allison's firm, to see if they can guide you and assist you because A lot of you know that for some of the services, the wait list is about 17 years long. All right, next. Now let's differentiate on programs that are not based on financial need. SSDI, and a lot of people get these confused. SSDI is Social Security Disability. And this would be based, like if I became disabled, I could apply and it would be based on my work record, regardless of my income. I can still get that. And then Medicare is medical care for people over 65 plus some disabled people, and they're not based on financial need. Okay. So when we're working with families, a lot of families don't know if their child's going to need government benefits. They may have, their child may be very young. They may have autism or Down syndrome or something, and they're not sure if their child will be able to support themselves. But I recommend that families retain the option of being eligible for those programs because we don't know what those programs are going to look like years from now. I will tell you that 15 years ago, somebody with physical disabilities could not get health insurance. Medicaid was the only option for those people. So we don't know what the programs are. So keep this option open in case they need it. Next slide. Now let's talk about special needs trusts and what makes them so special. So next slide, a special needs trust. We know that if we as parents pass away, we know that the government benefits are not enough to support our child. Our child cannot live on $941 a month and Medicaid. We know that we have something to leave them. We want to supplement what they get from the government benefits, but we don't want them to lose those benefits if they need it. Okay, next. So assets in a special needs trust are not a countable resource. They do not count against your child for eligibility for SSI and Medicaid. And that's if the trust was properly drafted and if it is correctly distributed. The result is that what you leave to your child in a special needs trust will supplement the government benefits, but not supplant them. So the result is a better life for your child because then hopefully they'll have enough money to care for your child.
Trustee, I just want to comment on something, a properly drafted special needs trust and how important that is. And you guys, if you've attended before, you've heard me say your situation is specialized with your loved one with a disability. It's really important that you work with a specialist, whether it's a specialist attorney that is nuanced in estate planning matters and special needs matters, or it's a specialized financial planner who's nuanced in special needs. It really matters. And I see all the time trusts that are drafted in such a way that would not be considered a bona fide special needs trust in the eyes of the Social Security Administration, which really, really matters. So thanks for mentioning that because I think it's really, really important. So I always say when you have a neighbor that's the real estate attorney that says they'll do a special needs trust for you, just say no. It's better. You're going to end up paying for it anyway, with the mistakes. So I think it's really, really important to work with a specialist.
Thank you for that. Yes, we often have people that had estate plan done by an attorney that didn't specialize, and they ended up having to pay us to completely redo it or clean up a mess. So now, once there's money in the trust and the money is distributed or used for your child, that's not considered income to your child if it is done correctly. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Okay, next. So what is a trust? Obviously, it's a legal document we prepare. But when it's a special needs child, it's actually going to be a blueprint for the care of the child if you're not around. In the trust, we'll talk about the people that will be involved, the money, how that's used, and then create a safety net for your child. Now, qualifying your child for government benefits is not the only reason that we draft a special needs trust, even if your child may not need those government benefits. When I draft a trust, I draft it for with flexibility for changed circumstances. So your child, when they turn 18, they may not be self-supporting, but maybe at 30 or 40, they are. And so I draft a trust so if they don't need government benefits, then the trust operates as a regular trust. But even if you're not sure about the government benefits, the question you want to ask yourself is if your child inherited money, would they be able to manage that money wisely and make that use it wisely and manage the money wisely. Typically not, even if they're high functioning. So by leaving it in a trust, you'll have a trustee that manages the money and wisely makes distributions for your child. Also, our trust provides advocacy for your child and also creditor protection. If you leave the assets to your child in a trust, and then your child gets sued or gets divorced, the money in the trust is protected. If they own it outright, it is not protected. Now, there are two types of special needs trust you need to know about. Can we go back one slide, Allison? Yeah, let's talk about first party trust. A first party trust is created with the child's own money or assets that are considered theirs. This might be an outright inheritance from a relative. It might be child support, might be their own savings, or it might be a personal injury settlement. First party trusts have to have a Medicaid payback provision. So whenever your child dies, whatever is left in that trust has to first pay Medicaid back for anything they've spent on behalf of your child for your child's entire lifetime. Okay, next. Oh, go back one more. Third-party trusts are created, funded with somebody else's money. So this was money that was never, or assets that were never your child's to begin with. So this is typically when we're doing estate planning for parents, we're doing a third-party special needs trust that when you leave assets upon your death, it will go into your child's third-party trust. The great thing about third-party trust is it does not have a Medicaid payback provision. So that money will not go to the state when your child passes away. Instead, we will have language in your trust that says where you want that money to go upon your child's death. It might go to their child, your other children, charities, whatever you would like. Okay. How does money get into your special needs trust? And we're talking about third-party trusts. Next. So, a will, when we work with a family, we're doing a package for you, and part of that is a will. So your will state that that child's share goes into that special needs trust upon your death. Life insurance. And life insurance is a great way to fund the trust for your child. And Allison would be a good person to talk to about that. The way that gets into your child's trust is it doesn't go through the will. It's distributed by beneficiary designation. And that supersedes the will. So we assist our clients in putting the right wording in that beneficiary form to make sure your child's trust is a beneficiary. So for my husband and I, we are each other's primary beneficiary, but our contingent beneficiary is our daughter Jordan's trust. Retirement, IRAs and 401ks, these are also distributed by beneficiary designation. So again, we assist our clients to name that as a beneficiary. So again, for my husband and I, we are each other's primary beneficiary. Our contingent beneficiary is Jordan's trust. Also, gift. So other people may want, other grandparents or somebody may want to give money to this trust that you've created. Child support, we'll talk about in a minute. Okay, next slide. This shows the funnel. So typically, nothing will go into the trust until you or you and your spouse pass away. So assets from your will, your life insurance, retirement will go into the special needs trust. So keep in mind, you don't have to put any money into it now. And most of our clients don't. Now, you may have a specific reason. You may have some money that your parents left you that you want to put into it or something, but typically, it's not funded until you both pass. Now let's talk about IRAs, 401ks, and special needs trusts. This is so very cool. So if you leave your IRAs, 401ks, I'll just call them all IRAs. If you leave those to a child who's not disabled, they have to cash it out within 10 years of reaching the age of majority. This is a new law in the last few years. But people with disabilities are an exception to that 10-year rule. So if you leave those IRAs to a special needs child, they get a lifetime stretch. That means that money can grow tax deferred for your child's entire lifetime. They will have required minimum distributions within 1 year of inheriting this, but the amount of the required distribution is based on your child's life expectancy according to the IRS single life chart. So, because of that tax-free compounding, that money can grow a lot. So, this is just a diagram that showed that combined, these people had $1 million in IRAs. And it was earning a rate of 6% per year. And you can see that that grows to almost $5 million. Now, the blue is the growth. The light green you see on the top is the required distributions. You can see that they're small at the beginning and become larger later on. So, very powerful. Now, of course, you don't want to leave IRAs to your child outright. So, and not all trusts qualify for this tax-deferred growth, but we draft the trust to include the right language so that it qualifies for that tax deferred growth. It meets those IRS requirements. So you can name the special needs trust as the beneficiary. Next slide. Okay, next slide. We talked about that. Let's talk about child support. This is huge. So, child support over the age of 18 in Texas, and you may be from another state, but in Texas, the law allows child support to be paid beyond the age of 18 for a child that's disabled, as long as that child's disabled. So, potentially their entire life. But when they're 18, that child support is considered income to that child for SSI and Medicaid purposes. So, for example, if SSI is 943. If child support is ordered of 950, that's more than SSI. The child will not only lose SSI, but they will lose Medicaid. And for some of our clients, that can be near fatal for that child. But there's a way we can avoid that. What we do is we create a first party trust for your child. And when we work with the families, we draft the trust. And then the child support decree signed by the judge has to have special language ordering that into the trust. This is to meet the Social Security Administration requirements. So, we also help the family law attorneys have that right language. So that way, your child can get child support and SSI and Medicaid. Now, let's go back to the trust you've created as part of your estate plan and you pass away monies in it. What can that be used for? Okay, next slide. First of all, what can it not be used for? Your trustee cannot give cash to your child because that's considered income for SSI purposes. I prefer that the trustee not even use a debit card. Other than that, the trust can be used for anything that the government benefits don't pay for. Next slide. So, it can be used for all of your child's personal needs, their social, recreational activities, entertainment, education, medical. So, it can be used for the essentials of life, obviously, their food. It can be used for their travel, their haircuts, their clothing, furniture, bedding, of course, therapies, food, special food, supplements, all of those things it can be used for. Next. So, how does your trustee use the money? They can't give cash. They can't just deposit it into somebody else's account. So, one way is they can write checks from it. That's not considered cash. Or they can use a credit card for your child and then pay off that credit card each month with the trust bank account. But the most effective card is what's called a TrueLink card. You can go to truelinkfinancial.com to look into this, but it's basically a preloaded card. Your trustee, if your trustee wants your child to have $1,000 a month for miscellaneous expenses, the trustee transfers $500 from the trust bank account or $1,000 under the from the trust bank account onto this card. But the cool thing about the TrueLink card is that your trustee can put limits on where it can be used and what it can be used for. So that is very helpful in some situations. Next. All right, who will be the trustee? Let's talk about the trustee and let's talk about the trustee's duties. This is after you pass away. Your trustee will be in charge of making sure the money is invested properly, working with a financial advisor. And then they're going to be making distributions. That means using the money for your child. They have to be willing to learn how to do that without affecting your child's government benefits. Then they will be the ones to make decisions about whether this is a good distribution or not. They'll have to keep good financial records, and they'll have to have an accountant file a tax return for the trust every year. Next. So it can be an individual, a family member, a friend. They can hire whatever professional assistance they need, and the trust would pay for that. The trust can also compensate your trustee. There are also corporate trustees, trust companies that can serve as special as the trustee. And in Texas, we are blessed with several excellent trust companies that specialize in special needs trusts. So, what are the advantages of a corporate trustee? Is you've got somebody who is a professional that knows how to make distributions without affecting benefits. This is what they do every day. They're used to dealing with beneficiaries who are disabled. It takes a burden off of your family if somebody else is doing that work. Of course, they have to be paid a fee. Typically, that's over 1.1% per year, depending on how much you have in that trust. All right, next. So I do want you to be aware there is a master pooled trust with ARC of Texas. So this is for small trusts. If you don't have someone who can be the trustee, the ARC of Texas can serve as the trustee. Next. When we're drafting the trust, and a lot of times we're not just naming trustees because we want you to name at least two or three successor trustees, so that if the one person you've named has died or can't serve, you've got someone else in line. In a lot of our cases, our clients will also name a trust advisory committee. We also call it a best interest committee. You can name 3 to 5 people that might be family members, friends, and these people are going to serve when you pass away and money goes in the trust. So they can advocate on behalf of your child to the trustee. They're going to be a support team for your child. If you have a corporate trustee, we are going to make sure you name a trust advisory committee because we want that committee to have the power to hire and fire that corporate trustee. Because we can name a great corporate trustee today, but your trust may be used for decades by your child. That trust company may be bought out. That new bank may not be good doing a good job. So we've got some authority with this committee to adjust things over the years. Next, what happens if you don't have a special needs trust? So if you don't have a will, that's really bad because your family will have to go through intestate procedures in the probate court, and then it will go to your child outright. Okay, next slide. So, you could choose to leave nothing to your child, and I've seen people want to do this, is they'll say, I'll leave everything to my other children and nothing to this child. That's not a good way to go because when you leave it to your other children, it's not protected. So if they got married and divorced, all of that money could go to their spouse. If they die and leave their assets to someone else, it goes. Or if that family member develops a gambling addiction or whatever, that money's not protected. So please don't leave it outright to other family members. We also don't want you to leave things outright to your child. Next. So what else do we need? So obviously you need a will that states where your assets are going to go upon your death. The assets that go through the will would be, your house, your bank accounts, those types of things. We also do a document where you can designate who would be your child's guardian if both parents pass away. So if your child needs a guardian, we want you to choose who that is. We also want to assist with beneficiary designations. People who just have a trust and those beneficiary designations aren't done right, their plan falls apart. We also coordinate with other family members. We give our clients a letter that they can give to grandparents or other people to give to their attorney because those people can also leave assets to this trust. In addition, for the parents, we do powers of attorney for you so that financial and medical power of attorney. So if you were incapacitated for a period of time, you've got people with legal authority to step in and take care of you and your children. Next.
Tracy, I just like to mention that I'm a fan of the power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney for kids that we're sending off to college, neurotypical kids, because we just saw some weird stuff happen, like mental health crises and other little things that have happened, a fire in Texas State. We've seen some different things over the years, and it's just a good idea to have those documents in place for your adult kids as well.
Absolutely. All right. So as you can see, we take a holistic approach. Just having a piece of paper that special needs trust is not going to be enough for your family. Next. So when do you need to create a special needs trust? You need to create it before you die or become incapacitated. We don't know when that is, and so you want to do it as soon as possible. For some reason, some people think that the timing of the trust has a connection with guardianship. There's no connection. We have clients that come in with a newborn baby with special needs, and they're doing the special needs planning. And then we have people that obviously come a lot later. Okay, next. Next slide. What is the result of wise planning? What if we do this right? Well, first of all, you're going to have a financial plan to pay for the child's care. You might be working with Allison to figure out how much you need to leave that child. And then you'll have all of that figured out. You're going to have a support team in place to care for your child. You may have instructions for your child's care. And then your child will retain that option to be eligible for government benefits if they need it. And the result is just well-being for your child. A more fulfilling life. Let's go back to our scenarios. If the families had done this right, what if Izzy's parents had a will and a special needs trust, and then they left their life insurance and IRAs to that trust? Well, when the parents died, that money would have gone into the trust, and the trustee would have used it for Izzy. But she would have kept the SSI and the Medicaid that was paying for attendant care, diapers, all kinds of things. And with the government benefits plus what the parents left him, that would have given her a good quality of life. She would have had a choice of where to live. Maybe she would want to stay in her home, or she could live in a group home or have a roommate in an apartment or whatever. But she would have money in that trust to do that. And she would not have ended up in an institution. Next, if you remember, Andrew's parents left everything to Susan. When she died, the parents' money all went to her husband. But what if they left it in a special needs trust for Andrew and named Susan as the trustee? Well, then when Susan died, the money would not have gone to her husband. It would have stayed in Andrew's trust, and the parents would have named a successor trustee to step in and manage that for Andrew. He would have stayed in his group home with his friends and in his neighborhood and would have continued to have a good life. And then Kyle, his father had a special needs trust, but Uncle Bob in another state was the trustee. But what if he had named a trust advisory committee in his trust? Then there would have been 3 to 5 people here in Texas that knew Kyle and could have advocated to that trustee and said, "Hey, Kyle has a great life here. He's got this job and friends. Let's figure out how to keep him here." Then Kyle could have stayed in Texas and would not have moved to the state where he was miserable. Next. So those are the basic top 10 questions. Our law firm does this special needs planning. We also do guardianship, but we do special needs planning for people who reside in Texas. So this is about 75% of what our law firm does. If we can assist you, feel free to give us a call. Thank you.
Okay, We are going to go through some of the questions that we have in the chat box because we have some time for that. So we do have lots of questions in there. So I'm going to just read those out to you, Tressie. And just so you guys know, we have been in webinar mode, but it is being recorded. Everybody's going to get a copy of today's slide with Tressie's contact information, how to reach out to her directly. So you'll get a link to the slides and a link to the recording. So the first question, my son, age 6 years old with autism, can I apply for SSI and Medicaid waiver? We are parents, not citizens. We are here on B2 visas, live with friends. Please guide me.
My first question is the child a citizen? If the child is a citizen, that's the defining factor. So again, for basic SSI and Medicaid, they are going to look at income and resources of the parents. But yes, put your kid on the waiting list for those, the interest list is what they call it for those waiver programs now, and see what your child may be eligible for. There are a couple of websites you can go to, 211texas.org. I'll put this in the chat box.
Navigating Life Texas is another one.
Yeah.
But we have an entire webinar on how to get on the Medicaid waiver interest list. And just because I know we have some people from out of state on here, every state has Medicaid waivers, all of them. Some of them have terrible waiting lists, like Texas and Florida. Other states don't have any waiting lists at all for the Medicaid waivers. And Medicaid waivers are designed to waive off some of the cost of care for caring for an individual with a disability to keep them in home and community-based services. They might pay for various therapies. They might pay for attendance services, respite services. There's a lot of different waivers, and different waivers do different things. But in general, the income guidelines for the waiver is based off of the kid's income and assets, not the parents in general. So for our next question, Tressie, is there a minimum amount to start a special needs trust? I understand funding upon death, but some IRAs or trusts require an account number to list as a payable on death beneficiary.
You don't have to fund it now. You don't have to put, I mean, we tape a $10 bill to it so that it's considered a valid trust. You don't have to have anything in it now.
I'm a fan of keeping your own assets nimble in the 25 to 35 years that you could be spending in retirement, and fund it later. Now, sometimes, these special needs trusts might be funded by money that a grandparent left, right? So they could be funded while the, during your lifetime for that said individual because another family member passed away and left money for the trust. But they're basically, so the answer is no, there's not really a minimum. $10 is what you do. I've seen $5, I've seen $1, I've seen $10 or whatever. So bottom line is you don't have to have millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up a special needs trust. Is that right, Tressie?
Correct.
Okay. For our next question, is staying at a parent's house with them an income to the child for SSI purposes?
Yes, because you're providing shelter, that's considered in-kind support and maintenance. That will reduce your child's SSI by one-third unless you have them enter into a rental agreement with you.
And I am in agreement with you, Tressie, that number of 500, we used to say 500 or 600, but they changed a rule recently because they were saying that it had to be like fair market value. The fair market value went out the window. So 500, even 400 is actually enough for the rent agreement, for it not to have that one-third reduction. So you just need a rent agreement. There is also something called a fair share agreement, which is basically the housing cost, the utility cost divided by the number of the people in the household. I personally lean towards a rent agreement over the fair share. There's a lot of bird dogging of proof on the fair share stuff. Okay, with the Medicaid waiver, what is the travel expenses total in the first year allowance? And that is a loaded question. And we're not going to be able to answer that because there are multiple Medicaid waivers, and every budget for every waiver is different. But you can Google Medicaid waiver budgets Texas, and they did just finally update a document that hadn't been updated since 2018. So those budgets are out there. So I would suggest looking at that. And also, furthermore, on the waivers, it has to do with the level of need or the RUG score. So one person that has the same waiver may have a higher level of need than another person, so their budget may be different, right? Okay, SSI payback, how many months and years?
So there's there's no SSI payback in a trust, there's only a Medicaid payback.
So Medicaid payback in the trust, if you are speaking of an SSI payback where there was an overpayment, the Social Security Administration has been known to make overpayments in the year in years past currently, and then you get a letter saying you owe us the money back. They usually take a 10% of the benefits over, it, I don't know, until it's paid off is usually what they do. It's usually it's 10% or less of the current benefits is what they will do to pay it back. And you'll get a long letter that you should read every word of that it'll explain what they're doing in the back pay. And if you don't, you can request one. Okay. If the adult child already has Medicare and Medicaid, does the Medicare stop for 2 years when they start collecting the disabled child benefits, 50% of the parents?
No. If your child's getting Medicare, that means they're getting SSDI, which means they worked some, but no, it won't stop. They'll still get both.
That's right. And also, when they switch over to getting that 50% of the parents' record, it is possible that your child has worked some and they're drawing off of their record, and then but they haven't earned substantial gainful amount, which for 2024 is $1,550 gross earnings per month. So when their parent turns on their Social Security, that they're eligible for some SSI, some SSDI under their own record, and some childhood disability benefits or DAC benefits under a parent's record. We see a few cases of that a year, Tressie. But what I wanted to mention is you may get a denial for your Medicaid, and there are protections under the law. You may have to reapply for Medicaid, but they can't cancel the Medicaid because the increased income because of disabled adult child benefits is the bottom line. So don't assume if you get a letter saying you're dumped off of Medicaid that it is legit, because there are protections under the law for that when kids are switching from SSI to childhood disability benefits or DAC benefits under a parent's record. Okay. This is a good question, and it's important, and I want us to hone in on this, Tressie. What are the pros and cons to using a special needs trust versus a living trust? I get this question a lot. You know, I actually met with somebody today whose parents left a significant amount of money into a living trust, not a special needs trust. Let's talk about what qualifies in the eyes of the Social Security Administration, Tressie.
Yeah, so sometimes parents will have a revocable living trust for their own assets. They might do that to avoid probate or for a lot of different reasons. But then when it goes to the child, we do recommend a special needs trust, because a revocable living trust may have provisions that cause it to disqualify beneficiary from government benefits. So it really depends on how that trust is drafted. But a lot of times, I was just reviewing one last week where they left assets to a child in a revocable living trust, and there were provisions in it that Social Security and Medicaid would reject. So they would say to that parent, this is not a special needs trust. Your child is not eligible for benefits.
And my opinion is that if you have a special needs trust that was drafted by an attorney that's not nuanced in special needs, do take it to a professional that is nuanced in special needs and at least get eyes on it. So that way we don't find out later accidentally that it's not legit. Okay, if we get Medicare for our child, do we have to get Part D as well? You have to get Part D unless the Part D is covered by your primary health insurance. So like if you have said child on your primary group health plan and the group health plan provides prescription drug coverage, that would be considered credible coverage. And otherwise you do need to get Part D, which is the prescription drug. Okay, when and how will SSDI start? So the confusing thing is, is we've talked about SSI, Supplemental Security Income, which is for the indigent and the disabled, and you don't have to pay into that system. SSDI, or under the Social Security, basically Title II versus Title 16, you do have to pay into that system. But when we have a child whose disability started prior to age 22, they have the ability to be covered under a parent's record for essentially SSDI, Social Security, also known as Disabled Adult Child or Childhood Disability Benefits. We like to name the same thing over and over again, just to confuse people. But anyway, bottom line is when mom or dad turns on their Social Security disability or their Social Security retirement, that's when the child that has never worked would flip over to essentially SSDI or Childhood Disability Benefits under a parent's record. It is possible that a child with a disability has worked and they have paid into the system. And once they have enough work credits, they could be getting some SSDI and some SSI, basically SSDI under their own record. So it is kind of confusing. We do have a special software that actually tells us exactly when and how to pull the trigger on everything to maximize benefits for the whole family. So that's an important consideration, and everybody's situation is a little bit different because some of these kids work and some of them don't. We have a question here. I'm in Chicago. Can you give me the name of a firm who does special needs trust? So I like to refer people to the National Association of Elder Law Attorneys. I think that's a reputable place to look in the Chicago area. If you're working with us, we'll make a recommendation. We make recommendations of attorneys that we know are great and know exactly what they're doing with special needs all the time. The other place that I would look is the Academy of Special Needs Planners. Those are two both great websites nationally. So if you're attending from out of state, if you need to find an attorney in your area that is nuanced, that's great. So again, that's the National Association of Elder Law Attorneys and the Academy of Special Needs Planners are both great places. Can your special needs child have their own Roth IRA, or will that count against them? And so, Tressie, I'm going to ask you about this because I think it's a slippery slope. It looks like to me in some states, it's kind of questionable on retirement assets, on if it's an IRA and whether or not it's countable. And what I have researched and looked at, I think you and I have kind of bantered on this before. It depends on whether or not they have accessibility to it or not. And so I lean towards don't do it. What are your thoughts on this?
Social Security and Medicaid do not have a specific rule on how they treat IRAs. So there's no clear answer. Right now, our local Dallas Social Security offices treats them a certain way, but that's not statewide. It's not nationwide. There's no clear answer because they haven't given us a written rule for whatever reason. So yes, so it may be interpreted differently by your Social Security office.
So, and that's the thing, it is very, very inconsistent. Until there is an official rule, I would say no. And in my opinion, I mean, there clearly there's not a Medicaid payback on a Roth IRA, but a 529 ABLE, it's after tax money and tax-free distribution. It kind of acts like a Roth IRA in some ways, as far as the tax benefits are concerned. So an ABLE is a much safer bet. Of course, you can't have endless amounts in an ABLE account. We've got entire presentations on ABLE accounts and what those limits are on that. So let's see. Thanks for asking that question. Lots of great questions here. If we move to a different state, does the trust get impacted?
Yes. So when you move to a different state, I do recommend that you have an attorney, a special needs trust attorney in that state, review it, because even though SSI and Medicaid are national programs, they're administered by the states. Different states have different rules, and trust law is different. So when we have clients that move to our state, I review it and make sure it is compliant with how we do things in Texas. Again, that NALA website, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, NAELA.org is a good resource. Some of those lawyers are only elder law and not special needs trust, but you'll have a lot of attorneys to choose from, and you can go go to each of their websites and choose one.
The other thing I would say is the ARC in your area, if you're out of state, is usually they're pretty good at keeping their ear to the ground, and they know who the attorneys are, who the movers and shakers are, who the special needs attorneys, that they hear their names over and over and over again. So that may be another place to other special needs parents that have worked with, you know, local special needs attorneys in your area is good. The other thing I want to mention to that question there, if we move to a different state, does the trust get impacted? And the answer for that too is if you move to another state, guardianship gets impacted too. That's a whole nother discussion, but guardianship is by county here in Texas. So even if you move counties in Texas, you know, you need to get that looked at. So, and different laws, some states call it guardianship, some call it conservatorship, different laws for different states. So that's an important factor as well. So if I want my child to have more than the $943 a month for food and rent, but a special needs trust can't be used for that, and leaving him the money directly would cause ineligibility for benefits, plus someone might take advantage of him, then how do I leave him any money to be used for rent and food?
So the trust can be used for rent. Food was recently dropped off, so we don't have to look at food anymore, but it can be used for rent if it is. If it's used for shelter, that will reduce your child's SSI by one third, which usually is a good thing. Or if they have enough money in their SSI account to pay for housing, they can. That one third reduction is not fatal. Also, keep in mind that if your child was disabled prior to the age of 22, and if you contributed to Social Security system, then your child's going to be getting disabled adult child benefit. That is not based on financial needs, so that will not be reduced by distributions for food or for shelter, actually.
Someone says, with the professional assistance, will any endorsements be allowed? But basically, can you pay for legal and financial services out of a special needs trust, trustee?
Yes.
Okay. Could you give us a range? Inquiring minds want to know how much money on average it costs to set up a third party special needs trust. And this, guys, this is going to be very individualized for each attorney. But Tracy, you've been doing this for a long time. Just give us our average range of setting up a third party special needs trust.
So I do want to tell you that typically it's part of a package where you have the special needs trust. We do wills for the parents, powers of attorney, changing beneficiaries. You're going to see a wide range of fees. It's really hard to know for that entire package. I don't know what you're seeing, Allison. I would say maybe average or 5 to 10,000. I'm not sure what you're
seeing. I think
seeing,
that's
Allison.
A fair average. That is exactly what we're seeing. So, okay. How could or would you utilize an ABLE 529A with a special needs trust? And right now, the bottom line is that the special needs trust is not tax favorable. An ABLE account is. An ABLE account can pay for shelter without a one-third reduction to SSI. A special needs trust can make a distribution to an ABLE account. So right now, unless they get rid of the whole shelter rent thing with the Social Security Administration, that's a beauty of the ABLE account. But the bottom line with an ABLE account is if it can be construed as achieving a better life with an for an individual with a disability, you can pay for it out of an ABLE account. So it's very non-restrictive, including it could pay for private school transition programs and college should your loved one want to go to higher education. So, and again, we have complete webinars on that one. So that is a good question. Anything you'd like to add on that, Tressie?
No, you explained it well.
Okay. Once a special needs trust is established, will it ever require a renewal at any time or can it expire?
So the trust does not expire. However, we recommend that our clients come to us every 3 years to see if they may need to make changes. They might want to change trustees or remainder beneficiaries. But most importantly, occasionally special needs trust law changes. And the way we work with our clients is when they come in at that 3-year mark, we let them know here are the changes. And if it affects their trust, we will do an amendment. But I have many trusts that have never needed an amendment. So you may not ever need a change, but I do recommend you touch base with your attorney every 3 years.
Designating a guardian, this question isn't complete with a corporate, I think it's a corporate trustee is what she's referring to. So I think what the question is, and I know you've heard this come up, what if the end of the line, as far as a successor guardian, there is nobody else? Do you have any recommendations for naming a successor guardian of the person if there is nobody else? And then, of course, a corporate trustee could be the guardian, I mean the trustee, of the special needs trust. What do you think about that?
Well, I want to change the question a little bit and differentiate between the role of a trustee and the role of a guardian of the person. So, in guardianship may be called conservatorship in your state, but the guardian is the one who is physically going to make sure your child is taken care of. The trustee is managing the money. Now, you may name the same person as the guardian and the trustee, but if they're different, your guardian will have to ask for money from the trustee and then they'll hopefully work together. So when we work with clients, we have you sign something called a declaration of guardian for your child. We ask you to list some successors. So if the person you listed is not living or can't serve, you've got some people that can serve.
So that is really, really good. So I know that we're out of time for today and there was more questions in the chat box, but reach out to us directly. We'll be happy to connect with you. You guys will get an email with Tressie's contact, our contact information. We always offer free personalized consultation if you want to take a deeper dive on some of your questions. It's certainly been our pleasure to be back with you, Tressie. Thanks everyone for putting your awesome questions in the chat box, and we will look forward to connect with all of you again soon. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Allison. Bye-bye.
Bye now.